Hello and welcome to season 2 of the Plasticology Project podcast. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here. My name is Dr. Paul Harvey and I am the host of the podcast. I'm also the author of the book, The Plasticology Project. So if you haven't got yourself a copy, can I suggest you jump online and find yourself a copy today? There I speak about some of the challenges and also the solutions that we are facing in the plastic pollution crisis in our world today. So once again, thank you for joining the podcast. Sit back, relax, and enjoy hearing the stories of those amazing people working around the world to help combat the plastic pollution problem. On this episode of the Plasticology Project podcast, we hear from Lumbani Umvula, based in Malawi, Africa. Lumbani is the founder of Trash to Cash, a social initiative that aims to combat plastic pollution in his hometown by collecting plastic waste and turning it into valuable building materials. Lumbani has been active in this space for a little over 6 months and has already received significant attention worldwide for his work. Lumbani is also involved in a number of social welfare activities and is recognized as the literacy ambassador in Malawi. Through his work, he has had the opportunity to demonstrate the importance of education to his community in Malawi. He has been instrumental in encouraging young people to value education and to go to school. And we will hear a little bit about Lumbani's boy in this podcast. So thank you, Lumbani, for joining us today on the podcast. I hope that we learn a lot from you. And in fact, I'm sure that we will learn a lot from you. And it is a great pleasure to have you here. First up, Lumbani, could I get you please to introduce yourself to the listeners?
My name is Lumbani Umvula. And I'm the founder of Trash to Cash team. I call it a team because it's a team of young people. Yeah, so I'm the chief executive office of Trash to Cash. So at Trash to Cash, we are making pavements and bricks from plastic waste.
So tell me how you got into Trash for Cash. Trash to Cash, and give me a little bit of an idea about what it is that your organization does.
What made me to come up with Trash to Cash was an increase rate of plastic pollution in Malawi. I've discovered that we got a lot of plastic trash being dumped into oceans, lakes, and rivers, even some crucial places like under the bridges. People just dump plastics anyhow. So I thought it wise that I should come up with a limit or a mechanism that can reduce plastic pollution in Malawi. So I thought it wise to come up with an idea whereby we can be collecting plastics from the community. From the community members, we can make something out of those plastics. So after seeing this challenge, I thought it wise that I and my team can now make bricks and pavements from plastic waste. So the organization started in last year, in November, on 4th November. And I've been learning the organization up to now, and so far I have seen some a little bit changes whereby now people are able to sell us plastic waste, and when they have brought their plastic waste at home, I do tell them the disadvantages of using plastics, but still more. We got a big way to go. We got a way to go because not all people are aware of harmful effects of plastic waste. And I have discovered that we are the first people in Malawi to come up with that innovative idea of converting plastic trash, plastic waste, into building bricks and pavement. Trash to Catch team has 12 members. We are 12 of us, and I'm happy because we're young people, very energetic and very innovative.
So give me an idea of some of the plastic material and plastic waste that you see in Malawi, and how much of that is there that makes it possible for you to make bricks out of it?
We got three types of plastics we're using. We got PVC, provinial chloride, some sort of hard plastics. Some plastics are really hard, and I think you know. And we got some plastics which are really soft, like plastic bags. There's some plastic plates that are common in Malawi. So we are not using hard plastics, like those plastics which they do use like electricity cables. We don't use them because they are really hard to dissolve during the process. Yeah, but we're using soft plastics because there it's easy to molten them during the process. So here is the process. We need to, when you want to come up with plastic bricks, you need to have the following resources. Number one, you need to have a drum, and you need to have a little bit of firewood. So after collecting the plastics, we put them in the drum and set fire under the drum. So after all the plastics in the drum have reached to the point of molten material, or they have dissolved due to the heat under the drum, we add a little bit sand. So after adding the sand, we got some molds. So the molds, I designed the molds to be giving us exactly the shape of a brick. So after putting the mixture of sand and the molten plastic material into the molds, we put the molds into the water for solidification. Then later on, after 5 minutes, we do remove the bricks from the molds.
Lumbani, what are some of the challenges that you face when you're working on plastic and turning plastic into usable materials for the future?
The main challenge is not about plastics, because as I'm outside my house right now, as we are chatting, I can see a lot of plastics everywhere. But now we are lacking personal protective equipment, and we are also lacking machinery whereby we can be producing more bricks per day, because here per day we do produce 100 bricks, because you know we are using our only capability is manual. So my team members, it's easy to get tired like that, but everything goes like that.
Yeah, definitely. I can imagine that it's hard work, because it sounds like quite a process to transform the plastic waste into the bricks themselves. Quite a lot of manual work involved. Tell me a little bit about how you would go about automating that process, or making it easier for the workers.
Number one, we need to have, I've already said, machinery. The machine can help us to produce more bricks, maybe within an hour. And the financial assistance, whereby now we can be able to purchase more plastic waste from the community. It is easy to go and collect plastics without buying. But I thought it wise that we have to be buying plastics from the community in another way, like helping the community to survive on their daily basis. But I and my team can also organize an activity whereby we can go around the markets and collect some plastics. And for us, for it also to be very easy, we need now, I thought it wise that we need to have bins, whereby we can set bins, plastic bins, written plastic only in different market places, in different public places, in different government offices, whereby now the people can be just throwing plastics in our bins like that. So it will make the work very easy. And another thing is the transport mechanism, because as I'm talking to you right now, I received a message yesterday from my friend in Lilongwe. They said they have collected a lot of plastics for us. But now, logistics and planning, how can they now send the plastics from Lilongwe to Zombasi? It's a 4-hour drive. So that's a challenge. And I'm trying my best to work on that challenge like that. Yeah, that's it.
We'll come back to this in a minute and also talk about the PPE requirements, because I know that that's something that you're quite active on social media, trying to raise attention and subsequently financial support to obtain. But I just want to get a
Yes.
sense first of what sort of policies, if any, or strategies are in place in Malawi to manage plastic and plastic pollution.
Oh, okay, fine. Thank you so much for the good question. Last year, the government set some policies and they set some rules that Malawi has to stop using plastics. But you know, we are used, and plastics are so cheap compared to other sources whereby people can be using here in Malawi. So because plastics are cheap, as I've already said, that is 50 kwacha a plastic bag. Someone can use it during shopping, so and it is very easy to carry. But last year, the government tried to impose rules and regulations to stop plastics using Malawi. But I've seen that maybe the government has withdrawn from those laws because some people went to the court and they got the injunction refusing the government to proceed with the laws. And not much policies. It's very flexible in the, but I just say not much policies. But I believe I remember last year they had that idea of banning people, stopping people from using plastics. But some people went to court and said, we are holding an injunction against these people who are saying we have to stop using plastics. So it's like the government is trying now, but the people who are like in business, in the plastic business, they are saying no, we can't stop producing plastics because it's a business like that. But if we can have awareness campaign, if we can have now, if we can proceed to consulting the government about the project, then everything can be fine, I believe so.
So when you say the people and people in business, are you referring to domestic businesses? Or are you referring to international businesses that are
Okay.
trading with Malawi?
I'm referring to both domestic people who are underprivileged. And those people who cannot afford to stopping using plastics in the international, because in Malawi we've got companies in Blantyre, and these companies do much. They earn their living through the same selling plastics. So that's all. It's domestic people in the international, because China is contributing a lot of plastic businesses in Malawi. They have contributed a lot. So they are into the group of people who went to court and say, we are having injunction, don't stop us producing plastics like that. And domestic people, because you know, I've already said that to buy a bag, a leather bag and a plastic bag, the plastic bag is so cheaper than a leather bag.
Yes, I've just done the quick calculations, and in Australian
Yes.
dollars, a plastic bag will be less than 7 cents, and in US
Yes.
dollars, it's about 4 cents. So extremely cheap, as you say, to purchase or obtain a plastic bag over, say, another format, another material. So when you go out and you speak to community members and you say, "Hey, we'd like to purchase your plastic," is there an understanding amongst the community generally about the impacts of plastic on the environment? Or is there room there as well for a bit of education around some of those alternatives for the future?
To say the truth, frankly, at first, the day I told the people that I'm buying plastics, so they said, "Why are you buying plastics?" Because to us, they're useless. So I said, "No, I'm buying plastics because I've got a project whereby I'm making bricks from plastic." So they said, "Wow, this is a great idea." So their interest was selling us plastic trash. So I sat down with them. I remember one day I sat down with the 20 women, and then I started telling them about the bad part of plastics. And I told them that for a plastic to decompose, it takes 500 years and plus above. So it has also contributed to our daily casualties, daily problems. But there is a great room for people to be taught about the disadvantages of using plastics and the challenges plastics has brought onto the face of the world. Yeah, but the room is vast. There can be some arrangements to train people. That's no problem. It's just free. People, I believe, they'll be happy and they can welcome the idea because, as I'm talking to you right now, there are some people who do come and visit us just to see what we're doing. And there are some people say they are curious, sir. I'll join you making plastic bricks like that. So people are interested to know more about the bad part of plastics and about what is it that plastics have contributed to today's challenges like that.
Yes, definitely. And interestingly, the work that you're doing, converting plastic as a waste product into plastic as a valuable resource, is an education piece in and of itself. Because even outside of Malawi, not very many people consider plastic to be a valuable resource that can be used for such a great application as building these bricks. So tell me,
Yeah, that's true.
have you managed to build a house or a structure yet with your bricks?
Currently, I'm building a certain small shelter. I just want to raise some chickens. But for a great building, I've not yet tried because I'm working on the project to build something tangible so that the people can see that plastics are really, really needed and they are of use. Yeah.
And what is the current style of building material? Give the listeners a sense of what you would be using traditionally to build dwellings or structures, and where plastic bricks might take over some of those applications.
Okay. When building, I tried to build, as I've fully said that I'm still building it. It will require, I think, a lot of plastics and a lot of bricks, because, for example, before I respond to your question, a kg of plastics, if someone can bring home 50 bottles. 50 bottles equals a kg of plastics. So a kg of plastics produces 5 bricks. So we can have in mind that we will need a lot of plastics. So the more we need a lot of plastics, the more we are like reducing plastic pollution around Malawi within and abroad. So we can use soil to building a certain structure using plastic bricks. We can also use cement. We can use cement. no problem, everything goes well. And because we can use the soil, people along the communities, if they can be taught more about the importance of plastic bricks, they can be buying from us and they can be building their homes, respective homes, with the soil. That's not a challenging issue.
I'm really curious to know how the economy around these bricks works. So if you're purchasing plastic from community members and then you're turning that into bricks and other building material, I'm sure eventually down the track, will those people that you have purchased the plastic from likely be the same people that will then purchase these building materials from you, or will you sell them into a different market and move the plastic and the bricks out that way?
What a good question. Okay, fine. The price for a one plastic bottle is 20 kwacha, 20 Malan kwacha, which is a relatively cheaper price. So after producing a brick, because the process is not an easy process, we do sell a brick at 150 Malay kwacha, which is also cheaper compared to those people who are producing concrete blocks, blocks are made from sand and cement. So they are not the same people who are willing to buy our products. Like, as I'm talking to you right now, there is this organization, it's a well-known organization around the world. We call it Catholic Relief Services. So Catholic Relief Services came to our operation site, I think two weeks ago. They said they want to be building structures for vulnerable people in Malawi. Yeah, so after seeing our bricks, they said we have to have a project with them. So that's our second client. But our first client was Waste Advisors in Lilongwe. After seeing our project, they said we have to produce 1,000 bricks because they want to use them as pavers like that. So that's all. But I've never seen someone from the community coming to us and say, sell me your bricks. Maybe because many people are not aware of plastic bricks. And as I've already said, that we are the first people in Malawi to come up with that idea of converting plastic trash to plastic bricks and pavements.
Yeah, and I think it's a great initiative because it is using what would otherwise be a significant waste product and turning it into something useful, which is a very, very clever, very smart thing for you to be doing. I wonder about the negative impacts on the environment or even structurally of plastic bricks. Have you considered any of that, or have you had any thoughts around what they might be?
Yeah, I had that idea one day and I had a further research. So the only challenge which I discovered was during production, when you are making now plastic bricks, they do produce fumes, but not much fumes into the air. So I just thought it was that my workers have to have heavy masks. That's why I said about PPE like that. But to the environment, I've never maybe gone further into research on how havoc or challenges can plastic bricks produce. But more of the research was based on the importance of plastic bricks. Because I think you are aware that Malawi now has been hit by some cyclones here and there. So plastic bricks can act as a water breakage than in normal bricks, our local bricks. So maybe if you can highlight the disadvantages of plastic bricks to local bricks, maybe you can act as an eye opener like that. But I think during production, that's the challenge, the problem I saw that we have.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk now about the PPE requirements. What are some of the PPE items that you've identified that you need to get your team equipped with?
Okay, number one, we need to have heavy masks because, you know, when someone is burning plastics, they do produce a smell. So we can say maybe methane or other gases into the atmosphere. So if one can be exposed to such fumes or gases from plastics during production, that means we can encounter some challenges like cancer and other challenges. So we need to have a heavy mask, number one. Number two, we need to have now gum boots. We need to have gum boots, and we need to have, I don't know what I can say, but the whole complete set of clothes, like is I can use it in another way, like in another language, like a jacket, like some sort of like that. Okay, in short, like the suits which constructors do put on when they are building houses. Yeah, so we need also to have a protective helmet, and I think a protective helmet and gloves. Yeah, like gloves can help us protecting us from splashes of molten material when you are stirring, when you are mixing the sand and the plastic molten material in the drum, like that.
How many people work in your facility at any one time?
Okay, at one time, okay, during production, at one time, I advise to have four them, where when they are tired, then another four people goes in. But we are 12 of us, but at once four, because it is feeding the drum with the plastics, and someone has now to check the heat, the fire under the drum, and after all the plastics are molten, someone has now to have a shovel. Then someone has to have a strong stick, whereby when this one is putting the sand into the drum, another person has to be mixing the mixture well until it is a little bit thick. So that's all.
Did you know that the Plasticology Project podcast needs your help? People like Lumbani struggle to find funding for their initiatives and their projects. So by supporting the Plasticology Project podcast, you're directly supporting people like Lumbani. If you're interested in helping to support these initiatives and these projects, you can find information on my website, www.docpjharvey.com/podcast. You can also find the information in the show notes. Any contributions to the Plasticology Project podcast are greatly appreciated, as these donations go to help the important work happening around the world. As we continue the discussion with Lumbani, I just want to take this moment to advise listeners that some of the content may be confronting and concerning. So listener discretion is advised. I wanted to take a little bit of a detour now, because you're an entrepreneur, really, in Malawi. How easy or difficult is it to become an entrepreneur in Malawi and achieve the goals that you set out to achieve?
Okay. First of all, it's not an easy thing to be an entrepreneur in Malawi. In the beginning of your business journey, it's not easy. For example, my business as making bricks from plastics. It's a strange thing. Now, because it's a strange thing, not all people are aware of it. Now, because not all people are aware of it, they are failing to accept the business. Number two is financial help. You need to have capital, enough capital to survive, to make it happen like that. Number three, which people are running away, I do advise them. I do advise them that they have to get their business registered. So a lot of people who are facing problems in Malawi, is another challenge is their businesses are not yet registered. So if your business is not yet registered and then you are advertising your business, people not like it. So it's really hard here in Malawi. It's really hard. It requires patience. It requires perseverance. It requires team building and like that.
Yeah, and I must say I absolutely admire the commitment and drive that you have, because you not only are involved with plastic brick making, but you're also involved in quite another quite an array of other social impact activities. I believe you are the World Literacy Ambassador for Malawi. Speak to me about that.
Okay, fine. Okay, yeah. I was nominated to be the World Literacy Ambassador in I think 2021, but it hadn't had a great impact. So the foundation in Australia said, "Lumbani, we are still interested for you to continue with the ambassador program." So I said, "You know what? Yes, I'm interested." But now the challenge is resources. So it came in 2022. They also sent me their email, said, "Lumbani, it seems like we are interested in you that you have to continue with the ambassador program." I said, "Okay, fine, good." In 2022, it wasn't also productive because of the same resources. And this year, I also received an email from them, and they said, "You have to continue now with the ambassador program." So I'm just interested to help Malawi as literacy is concerned because, Paul, let me tell you the truth that some of the major problems Malawi is facing, is because of literacy levels. Not all people in Malawi are educated. Now, because not all people in Malawi are educated, it is a problem. It is a problem. Like yesterday, I met a certain young lady, who got now two kids. So at the age of 16, imagine at the age of 16. So it means that woman had the first child when she was 12. So I asked her, "What's your problem?" Said, "School dropout." So you can see that lack of education, lack of resources, lack of government commitment to literacy issues is a problem, it's a challenge. Yeah.
And so your work is really trying to make a change in that space and promote opportunities for literacy and education. Is it common in Malawi for young women, such as this lady that you just spoke about, the age of 12, to have children at that age, or is this case an exception?
It's not accepted for a young girl to have a child at the age of 12, but the area I'm staying, the area I'm living, is some sort of rural rural areas. So, you know, because their parents are not educated, the only way for them to survive is to send their girl to someone who can take care of them. So, like a young girl going to a certain man who is older than her, what do we expect? We expect every marriage. So, the levels of every marriages in Malawi are at a rising rate than in maybe other countries within Africa. So that's another issue to deal with in Malawi. But according to our custom and our tradition, they don't allow that. But because of poverty levels, it has caused a lot of people to go into early marriages just because they just want to survive like that. So there is an increase of school dropouts. When you tell them go back to school, like yesterday I met also a certain woman. I asked her, how old are you? She said, I'm 20, but I left school when I was 17. So I asked her, do you have the capacity and the capability to go back to school if I can assist you? She said, yes. I'm tired of being harassed. I'm tired of taking care of my husband. So you can see the situation. So our culture doesn't allow at the age of 12, but at the age of, I think at the age of 18.
Yeah, thank you for that insight. It's very challenging, and many listeners might be confronted by the fact that there are places in the world where at the age of 12, the thought goes through parents and families' minds because the situation is so dire and the poverty is so very real that that is the only way out. Or the only way towards the light. And that's quite heartbreaking.
That's true. That's true because I once worked at Zomba Saint Hospital, and I happened to meet a certain young lady who was due to birth. So I asked her, how old are you? She said, I'm 15. So I said, you know what? We cannot help you in a normal way procedure, but now it will be operation. So it was a cesarean section. So I told her that, you know what? Due to your situation, I think your uterus and other things, it's not okay. So she cried, but after setting her down, she accepted that the problem was her parents chasing her out of their home, forcing her to get married like that. So to some extent, in other areas in Malawi and Malawi, they just consider it as a normal way, forcing children to go into early marriages. To them, it's a normal way of living. So to that part, we also need awareness campaigns for against early marriages, child labor, and gender-based violence. So yes, I'm the World Leaders Ambassador, but I need also to have capital to buy books, to buy uniforms and the school fund to help some people who can go back to school if they are willing. That's it.
Mbadi, you do incredible work, and listening to your stories, it fills my heart with joy to know that there are people like you in the world trying to make other people's lives better. And thank you for what you do, and please keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you so much. But it pains me. Let me tell the truth, Paul. It pains me because last year I sent back to school about five girls. But you know what happened? All of them are now, as I'm talking to you, two got children, small kids, little kids, and three are now pregnant. So it's like it brings confusion in my mind. I do get confused. Like you are trying to assist someone for a better tomorrow. You are trying to build her life for a better tomorrow. But later on, they come back to you with a lot of disappointments like that. So it brings pain in my heart, but still more, I still have the heart to help. But I cannot help so much because I'm limited as resources are concerned like that. But it's my willing. And I think another part which I'm really touched is that those people who are up there like leaders, they're not helping us. The leadership, the Minister of maybe education, they're just focused maybe on tertiary education instead of focusing on adult literacy and other things, even at primary level as education is concerned. And our curriculum is not all well organized. So our curriculum not well organized, our syllabus is not well organized, but I'm still fighting. I'm still fighting so that everything has to be of better by in the near future, that is.
I love that. Everything has to be better in the near future. And I also love that you can see that education is the future and you're striving so hard to provide education to as many people as you possibly can. I think that's just fantastic.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I'm really happy and I'm really glad that there are people who are listening to us. And because they are listening, I hope and I believe that they will reach out, more especially on our plastic breaks project. And if they are still interested in ambassador issues, they are most welcome. And I believe that that will make us to help someone whom is in desperation.
One of the things that I do want to ask you about, Mbani, is the cyclone. I know that it has impacted quite a lot of areas of Malawi and Mozambique and a few other countries. Has it had an impact in your local area? And what experience of the cyclone have you got, and also in amongst your community and your networks a bit further afield?
Yes, that's a good question. As I'm talking to you right now, the fence that surrounds my house has fallen because yesterday night we had heavy rain, so it has caused my fence to fall again. But behind my house there are some houses of local people. There are five houses which have also fallen, and I'm happy because to my side it is the face, but I'm sad because to others whom are closer to me, it's their houses. They are like homeless like that. So many people, yes, are suffering, and I've seen a lot of people from diaspora, like in the UK, and other countries. They are assisting us, but not in my area. In my area, I've never seen people assisting us. I've just seen of recently the mayor of Zomba City came just to inspect what has happened, and I thought he will be bringing some tangible solutions, but unfortunately he just brought plastic sheets for the people to cover their houses, around their houses. So I don't think that's the solution, because as I'm talking to you right now, we don't have food items and other things.
Yeah, thank you for that insight. I'm sure it's incredibly challenging at the moment. I've seen some of your photos and some photos from other colleagues as well from the impact of Cyclone Freddy. And I truly hope that the support that is needed can make its way to those people who need it in its various forms. Because as we know, with natural disasters of this magnitude, the event itself is a huge problem, but it's the aftermath that has the bigger impacts, and that's in terms of water sanitation, food availability, shelter, and so on. So I really do hope that there can be quick and useful responses to those that need the help.
Yeah, you're right, and some challenges which people might be facing currently, because the ground is too wet, and those people who are using pit latrines, that's danger, very dangerous, because I got a report last week that my fellow brother is failing to use the toilet because the whole toilet is full of water. So it has reached to the extent that the toilet is filled, and now the water is flooding from the toilet to his compound. So if all the water can go into the streams, rivers, that means we'll still have the problem of cholera in Malawi and other challenges like that. So we need chlorine. We need to also to educate people on how to treat themselves during this time. And there is this issue in Blanta, someone fell and now she's died because she went into the toilet, but she drowned because the toilet, the floor of the toilet was really wet. So she's gone, she's dead, as I'm talking to right now. So that's kind of a challenge we're facing, but we just need to know and to tell people resilient measures on how they can now adapt to such situations, because we might say Fred is gone, yet there is another thing which is coming maybe beyond Fred like that. So we just need to teach people resilient measures. They have to be of resilient and adapt to such climatic situations.
Definitely. As we see climate change take its full effect over the next few years,
yeah,
we're definitely going to need to see more resilient resilience measures implemented for communities such as yours, who are ultimately in the firing line of the biggest impacts of climate change. Mbadi, thank you so much for having a chat with me today and sharing about your plastic bricks and all of your other social empowerment activities that you're involved with. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you, and I look forward to hearing more about the progress of your organizations and the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for the call, and I don't take it for granted. Thank you so much, and I want to thank listeners, those people who have been here since the beginning of the call. I don't take it for granted, and if anything, they are ready to contact me. I'm always available.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Plasticology Project podcast. It's been great having you along. If you'd like more information, please see the show notes. Alternatively, head to www.docpjharvey.com. Plasticology Project podcast receives no financial support. If you would like to support the Plasticology Project podcast or any of the other Plasticology Project initiatives, please follow the link on the website. This has been another episode of the Plasticology Project podcast. Thanks for listening.